Well, Christian, this is it. It's the end once again. This is our last episode on product-led growth.
Well, we kind of said that with Ryan Chan's episode too.
Yes, but this episode really is our wrap-up. So it's officially our last episode of the series.
Well, as Anna said, we're going to wrap up the series by sharing key takeaways learned from our guests about product-led growth. If you missed any episode from the series, which I'm assuming none of you did, this is the one you definitely want to make sure you hear. So without further ado, Anna.
Thank you, Christian. All right. Our first takeaway is about the term product-led growth. It's often misunderstood because it's so broad. Product-led growth is an umbrella term that encompasses any go-to-market strategies that rely on the product to work for you and make your job easier. And as Blake Bartlett explains from our first episode of the series, product-led growth is a go-to-market strategy that relies primarily on the product itself to drive customer acquisition, conversion, and expansion. Christian, did I miss anything there?
Oh, you missed so many things, but thankfully that's not our job. We have like really smart people to fill in the blanks. So because product-led growth is such a broad term, the strategies that work for some might not work for you. Here's one strategy that came up a lot in this series, the freemium model. This idea of getting someone into the product with free features and then converting them to pay through an upgrade of some kind, it's a common PLG strategy. But I think usually you think of freemium and it's just sort of like, oh, freemium, and that's it. But actually what we heard on the show was that they really vary the different types of freemiums there are. So on one hand, we heard from Laura Borghese at MongoDB that they convert users to paid accounts based on storage and specific value add features within the product. Here's her talking a little bit about that.
As many other PLG freemium models, you come to our website, you can create an account on our platform, and then you can start use the product right away. And then we have a free model, which you can keep using the product as much as you want. Obviously, if you do need more computing power, more storage, or other things, or more specific features, that is where you have a paid tier of the product, and you start to pay us money.
But on the other hand, Jim Cansu with Duolingo shared that content consumption-based pricing was just not right for Duolingo because their mission was free language education for all. So Duolingo Plus, their paid version, monetized features around convenience, assessment, and gamification.
But finding upgrades that are not your content takes a lot of creativity, user research, testing, and creating value. And that's just a lot harder to do, but it is our bet that it pays off in the long term. I think in the short term, if we wanted to basically grow revenue, we could probably lock our content. We would increase a lot of our revenue, but in the long term, then it wouldn't make Duolingo what it is. So I think we're always building for the long term, but that's always harder to figure out.
So what are some of the, I'm curious what some of your monetization strategies are, like you said, if you're not going to gate the content.
We have a few actually. So And a few hypotheses that we're building Duolingo Plus with. One of them is convenience. So obviously the free user will see ads in their experience. The Plus user will not. So it's more convenient to use without ads. Another one is offline access. So if you want to use Duolingo while you're on a plane, let's say traveling to Italy, you want to brush up on your Italian, offline access lets you do that. So it's more convenient. Another one is assessment. So we provide what we call a progress quiz with Plus, where you can take at any point in your progression, and it'll give you a score, and it assesses your ability and mastery of the language, and you can keep track of it over time. And the third piece is basically gamified upgrades. So Duolingo has a lot of gamified elements. One of the examples is what we call the streak repair. So if you use Duolingo on a consistent basis, every consecutive day increases your Duolingo streak. If you miss it by one day, you can use your Plus allowance to repair your streak. And if they're in a position where they want to repair a lost day, Duolingo Plus lets them do that. So gamified upgrades, convenience, and learning assessment.
And we had Ryan Chan, CEO of Upkey, who talked about product-led growth in a specialized industry. He wanted to be sure he wasn't pricing out his users who didn't have the power to make purchase decisions. So Upkey's product was monetized based on the features most important to the manager, the one who had the buying power.
Obviously, we do have a paid product. We actually have close to 3,000 businesses that have chosen that paid product as well. For us, we said what's really core to us, we don't want to limit the number of people that this can spread to. I think that's another big decision point when you're thinking about product-led growth. Do you do it? And do you limit the free product based on the number of seats? For us, we said no. Our free product, you can add as many people as you want. You can add you know, two people, you can add one person, you could add 120 people in your organization or more. And the core premise behind it was, we think about our journey and why someone would want to use the free product. It's ultimately because they don't have the buying authority, the budget, the resources, but they do need to collaborate with the rest of their team, where we have put paywalls. We think about it again from the manager's perspective. And we profile them into two very different user stories. The manager cares most about data insights, reports, insights in how to run and change their business. So a lot of the upgrade features are based on product usage that's geared towards the facility manager. And our entire free offering is the collaborative aspect of maintenance, geared hyper-focused on the technician.
So while conversion within the product is a core tenet of product-led growth, the strategies to get there can be completely different. Christian, how about you take us to our second takeaway?
Oh, wow. We're only on our second. With pleasure. The second thing we learned is that product-led growth can work for all different types of businesses, no matter its size or industry, but only if you have the right foundational elements in place. What are those foundational elements? Blake Bartlett shares that the first and arguably most important element of PLG is a fanatical focus on the user.
The barrier to access for any individual employee or an end user, really, inside any business to find a product that solves their own problem and to very quickly, within a few clicks or taps, start using that product and solving that pain or that problem that they have, usually for free because of a free trial or because of freemium, that has completely changed the dynamic where that is how software is adopted inside organizations today. And because of that dynamic, if you aren't catering to an end user who comes to your website and is looking to solve their pain, then you are alienating really the force that drives software adoption inside organizations today.
And Lindsay Mindler, head of core design at Pinterest, supports what Blake shares by telling us about their user-centered approach to design. At Pinterest, the user is the biggest priority, even when it comes to setting metric goals.
On the growth team, we have very rigorous metric goals, then typically like to balance that out with a more qualitative goal to make sure that we're not just letting the metrics guide us. We should be metrics and data informed and not data driven. Even for a growth team, that's really, really important because you can game any sort of metric you want, but you'll start to see the long-term growth drop off if you're not listening to your users.
So striking the balance between moving the metrics or goals forward without losing sight of the user experience is critical.
I think one of the biggest mistakes I've seen growth teams make is they're basing everything in a business problem. And so basing everything in a user problem and making sure that whatever solution you're doing is actually solving that human problem, and then ideally validating that with research.
The second foundational element of PLG is securing company alignment across teams. Brian Croft said it best in his interview.
Yeah, so I think the thing that I'm most excited about with product-led growth is, so it might be counterintuitive, but it has nothing to do with the product team itself. You know, I think when people first hear product-led growth, they think, wait, so product is leading the company? Like the team, the CPO, like what does that mean? And, you know, as I've spent time in it and unpacked it a bit, what it means to me is what everybody else in the organization is doing to be product-led growth. So for example, the way I, you know, and I've read materials, so I hope I'm not, I'm just sharing what I've read. I don't want to assume that these are all my original thoughts, but there are things that have resonated with me. So for example, to be a product-focused company, it means that your prospects are able to experience the value of a product before they even talk with the sales rep. It means that if you are using the product, you can accomplish all these kinds of important jobs and you don't need to reach out to a customer success manager, right? Or technical support. If you're in marketing, you're relying in on the product so much that you're enabling people to market it for you and to talk about it and to share stories. And so it all comes back to having an amazing product, but it's how does the rest of the business leverage that amazing product to accomplish their very traditional goals, like increasing sales, increasing work, you know, driving marketing and, you know, qualified leads and customer success, having good metrics. Like that to me is like where the clarity of what product-led growth comes in is. It puts the onus on an amazing product, which we already feel like we all want to create a better product. But there's very practical and business outcomes that are related to having a great product. And so that's, I love that because it puts the onus and responsibility back on the product team. But then it pushes out the responsibility to say, how are you going to leverage our amazing product to accomplish your goals?
The third foundational element is getting the right team structure, which is something many in our community had questions about. Our guest shared a lot about growth teams and how they structure them. We heard about one unique approach from Jim Kansu, head of product at Duolingo. Their product function is split up into four teams: growth, monetization, learning, and new bets. Let's listen again to how he explains the different roles of each team and how these teams work together.
We call them areas. They're basically divisions. They would have multiple product teams that work on the area's mission. So they represent what our long-term product bets are in the company. So they're kind of, if you look at our long-term strategy, they'll map exactly to our product strategy. That's why they're broken down into these four buckets. So growth is one where they own the core metric of driving daily active users. One of the fundamental problems of self-taught language learning is keeping yourself motivated. So by making language learning more fun and gamified, we think we can drive fundamental improvements in daily active users. So there's a lot of work that's being done there to improve the stickiness, or the more metric-based term is just retention of Duolingo through gamification and improvements in basically the game elements inside Duolingo. And another team, for example, that works on growth is how do we make Duolingo more social? Because language learning is inherently very social. So how can we introduce social elements into Duolingo? So this is the growth example. So every area, so growth is one, monetization is another one. We'll have basically like long-term product bets that we fundamentally believe in, and teams that are working on these hypotheses. So monetization, we talked about it a lot. So basically, how do we add value to Duolingo Plus so that we can grow revenue? Learning is another area where to be more effective as a tool, we need to get better at teaching our users more and getting them to a higher proficiency level. So they work on increasing the efficacy of Duolingo. And then a fourth one is new bets. New bets is kind of every other kind of potential that we see in a new product or a complete new feature. So that might be a collection of different hypotheses that we have. One new concept that we're working on there, for example, is we're building a literacy app to teach reading and writing. So it's a bit of a sidestep from language learning even. And another area that we are also investing in is what we call the Duolingo English Test, which is a proficiency exam for college admissions. So things like that that are like don't really fit into any of the other areas are going to be compiled in what we call the new bets area.
Laura Borghese at MongoDB gave us her unique approach to team structure, starting with herself. You see, her title is technically under growth marketing, but she reports to the chief product officer. She explains how important this distinction is for her cross-team collaboration.
When I joined, I was actually tasked. So my charter at the company was to lead the digital marketing practice here. But then as I was, you know, talking to the company prior to joining, I started to get into, you know, how they were thinking about growth, how they were thinking about this special relationship that needs to happen between marketing and product if you really want to deploy a true product-led growth model. And still in the transition, what I liked again was that the company wasn't replacing the traditional sales-led go-to-market for product-led growth. In fact, the biggest challenge that we are still working towards today is that we are marrying the two models, and we don't want to alienate either of the two. So when I joined, my role was seen still very much about managing, and my team's role was still about managing digital channels and primarily advertising on those digital channels. But then again, when I joined and I started to bring with me a bunch of new principles about growth. Some people at the company were already thinking about that. We just helped sort of like articulate them in a consolidated way. And so even though my team was is part of the marketing practice, I now today report to our chief product officer. And it's kind of sort of like a deliberate choice right now, because we want to make sure is that the moment you decouple in any PLG strategy, the moment you decouple marketing from product, and the moment those two teams don't work really well and hand in hand.
And what is the overarching takeaway from understanding the foundational elements of PLG?
If I may, despite the industry, size, or maturity of your company, you can be product-led as long as you have a dedicated focus on the user, cross-team buy-in, and a team structure that allows for growth and experimentation within the product.
Oh, so easy, right? Now, to our last takeaway. This may seem obvious, but it's worth pointing out. For an organization to be product-led, there has to be a focus on data and experimentation. Christian, care to explain?
I do, but I'll let Laura Borghese explain instead. If you remember, she said every decision at MongoDB is led and evaluated by data because personal opinions can cloud your ability to serve customers effectively.
Data, in my mind, is sort of like the window into the minds of your buyers and customers. Since most of product-led growth businesses are primarily self-serve, again, they don't necessarily rely on the feedback that you could get from people on the ground, Salesforce being on the ground and bringing back what customers think about. The way you have to sort of like gauge what customers think about your product is by looking at how they interact with your product and with your marketing prior to product. So data helps you understand the customer's needs through both an explicit input, so the data that they share directly, comments, reviews, NPS, and so on, as well as implicit input, which is like this behavioral and engagement information that you collect as they interact with your product. And this data is critical to creating the most useful possible experience for your users, both to make the product experience aligned with what users are expecting from a company like ours, as well as to have our product and sales specialists help out customers out if they do sort of like raise their hand and want to engage with us, right?
You heard from Priyanka and Lindsay from Pinterest earlier in the episode talking about the importance of being data-informed, but not data-driven.
They also have a really interesting always-on research approach to stay data-informed and to maintain a consistent line of communication with their customers. They use those regular data points to inform their long-term roadmap. Let's hear again what that always-on approach means.
So when we say always-on, it basically, you think about it as if research is kind of looking a year out. And so we work really closely with research to start to drive them in the right direction. So for example, if we're starting to get a sense of, okay, these key markets might be ones that we want to go into. So there's five of them. We need to narrow it down to one or two that we're really going to focus on. Research will kind of go away, take the insights that they've already learned over the past couple years, and we'll work with data analysts to figure out, okay, which of these key markets should we go into? Typically, what they'll do is then they'll go and run research over a period of time and be bringing that to us constantly. So by the time we get to that next half or that next quarter, they already have that research and they've already moved on to something else. And so they're really looking pretty far ahead. And they're just constantly looking at that really long-term, long-term light of where we should be going. And of course, we're giving a little bit of direction there, but we really rely on the research team because they are the ones on the ground talking to our customers. And a lot of times we have the opportunity to go on the ground with them, but they're really huge experts on where we should be going. So that's one thing we do, as well as we're designing, we are testing out product as much as possible. So for all our different audiences, we have dedicated researchers who will do this kind of always-on approach.
With that, we end our series on product-led growth. Anna, can you give our listeners a quick recap, you know, like in case they were doing other things while listening to us?
Of course, I guess. To summarize, product-led growth is a broad term, but at its basic level, it's a go-to-market strategy. It relies on product to make sure that everyone's job is easier and more efficient. Secondly, there's really no ideal industry size maturity for PLG, but rather it's about putting the right foundation in place to leverage the strategy to its fullest potential. And finally, data is crucial to understand what's best for your users. And you can use data to experiment before just implementing changes to your product. The data can help inform innovation rather than drive it, because at the end of the day, your user is what matters the most.
Well done. We hope this series is as informative to you as it was to us. You can go back anytime and listen to our previous episodes in the series. And if you have any questions about PLG, don't hesitate to reach out to us at podcast@innovatemap.com. Next, we'll be kicking off a series on how to learn product. So if you don't already, be sure to subscribe to Better Product so you never miss a new episode. And as always, I'm Christian.
And I'm Anna. And this is
Better
Product.